Hello, listeners, and welcome to the AfriWet World, where we look to celebrate African history, people, and culture by telling our story. One of the things that is important to AfriWetu is the story of our legends and their significance to us and how we link back to our roots and understand their impact on our story then and now. So today, we have a legends show, which means that it is a guest narrator show, and I'm so excited to have as our guest today a fantabulous and wonderful friend of mine, the one and only Mwihaki. Let me tell you, my AfriWatu, this project and passion of mine coming to this stage is my standing on the shoulders of some amazing humans. And it takes a village, as you know. And one of those villages who is so instrumental is this lady right here. Now, before I hand over to Mwihaki, for those of you who live under a rock, let me share a few facts about her. She is a storyteller, like a real, true storyteller. And how she weaves her stories is like the orators of old. She's an author. She has a platform that celebrates Kenya, telling positive stories about this beautiful country and her people. And I mentioned it in season one, episode one. It's called Paukwa. Please, please, please go and check it out. We'll talk to her about it later as well. She is insanely smart and funny, but really, to me, I know I'm looking at her face, to me, she's like a sister who inspires with not just her words, but her true friendship. And also, for real, every single time we meet, I leave her feeling smarter than when I started. And I know many others who would say exactly the same thing. Mwihaki, I'm just going to ask you to say hi to everybody. We'll talk a little bit more later. But for now, welcome. You want to say a quick hello to the AfriWatu?
Hello, AfriWatu. I feel like I've had a herald. You know the way that royalty has, you know, like, wow, can you just come with me everywhere, Mona? And when people are said, can you introduce yourself? I just turn to you, like, please, go ahead.
go forth, introduce me.
But in all honesty, I'm really, really happy to be here. 51 episodes later,
I know, right?
You know, after sitting on that fence and being like, no, you know, what do I need? Can I do this? Da, da, da. 51 episodes, blessing people with knowledge where they're like, how comes I did not know that? Yes. How have I grown up in this country, on this continent, without the benefit of this knowledge? So I'm so glad that you got off your fence, took hold of your fear with both, you know, grabbed both horns of that fear. And started because, you know, AfriWet is just such a blessing. I keep referring people to it and being like, oh, you want to know about African history? Yeah, this is including my children's teachers who get probably get irritated because they're like, tukona syllabus is there. But I'm like, no. You need to know what you don't know. Yeah, yeah. So thank you for the work that you're doing, Mona. And I'm so, so, so happy to be here.
Thank you so much. You see, people, this is what I mean. Everybody needs a Mwihaki in their life to just also tell them, that fence you're sitting on, it was long. But anyway, before we get into it, I wanted to share a few facts about Angola, which is the country that we're in, for the legend that we're talking about, whom I haven't mentioned yet because I want Mwihaki to do the introduction to that amazing, amazing woman. So Angola is on the southwest coast of Africa, on the Atlantic Ocean to its west, DRC to the north, Zambia to the east, and Namibia to the south. Its capital city is Luanda. It gained independence in 1975 and had a troublesome period after that, but we are thankful because they're out of it now. It is, as I've said before, the seventh largest country in Africa. Some actually claim it is the birthplace of the samba dance, which is well known, especially in areas like Brazil. And when it comes to natural resources, it has large reserves of oil, diamonds, hydroelectric potential, and rich agricultural land. And with those few words, I would like to now sit back and hand it over to you, Mwihaki.
Thank you, Mona. Today, good people, we are listening to the story of the Ngola. And the Ngola is the ruler in this part of the world. And of course, we're going way, way back in time. And interestingly enough, the Ngola that we'll be learning about today is Mzinga Mbande, who is one of the most iconic rulers of Southern Africa. Whether you're thinking men, women, this lady had it. And the history of modern-day Angola is actually defined deeply by this 17th century legend. Now, how it all began. Ngolanzinga Mbande was born around 1581. And legend has it that she was born with her umbilical cord wrapped around her neck, which is where she came to get her name, because Nzinga means to twist or roll or rotate. And the religious leaders of the time said that her life would be filled with struggle and toil, twists and turns that were reminiscent of this start to her life. So from the very beginning, our queen was a strong-willed and determined person who would not let unexpected challenges, such as a paltry umbilical cord or others, stand in her way. So her providence is sometimes put under question. Although who her father and mother was is not disputed, her father was Ngola Mbande Kilwanji Kia Samba, and her mother was Ganguela Kankombe. So, but the question was around her mother's position in the noble house. Was she a slave, as claimed by some? We're not quite sure. What we do know is that she was not the first wife. And there was also a misunderstanding around the word Kijiku, which was the word for slave in Kimbundu, the language of the area. But that was a term for all the king's subjects. So what was undisputed is the fact that Nzinga was a royal. So a bit of context about the era in which our dear Nzinga was born, as it helps to show not only the turmoil that was existing at that time, but also the odds that she faced to become who she was. And it also allows us to start to truly appreciate her legend status. During her grandfather's time, who was Ngola Kilombe Kiakasende, who ruled between around 1575 to 1592, that was the time that the Portuguese were making their presence known. Coming along the coasts of Africa, finding interesting things and deciding, why can't we just make this ours? They arrived promising cooperation and respect through their emissaries, such as Paulo Dias de Nova, in 1575. But as we now know, this was not quite the true intention. It was more about plunder and exploitation. In time, there was great turmoil as the Portuguese proceeded with their plans to colonize, and war began in earnest. Thousands of Africans were captured by the Portuguese and sold into slavery, taken across the Atlantic as part of that cruel and sadistic slave trade that existed between the coast of Africa and the Spanish Americas. The threat to the royal family was real, and so they moved around to avoid capture, and it's in this time that Nzinga was born. She was brought up when her father ascended to the throne in 1592. And he ruled until about 1617 or 18, which is when his son, Ngola Bande, who was Nzinga's brother, became the ruler. It's said that Ngola Mbande hastened his ascent to the throne by killing his father, who had become oppressive, and the people wanted him out. But that's another episode. Drama! Yeah. So, let's learn a little bit more about Nzinga and how she became this amazing diplomat. She was always an astute and intelligent young girl, and this was nurtured in her youth. She was educated in the politics of leadership, and was even said to have taken part as a keen listener within her father's royal courts, where his political and royal discussions were held. And this gave her amazing insight, actually learning at her father's feet into the workings of politics and diplomacy. This training came in handy when the Ndongo kingdom was experiencing its worst years, when it was broken and had shrunk in size and lost influence over the tributary states. People began to lose hope following the ravages of war, and they had witnessed their royal family being exiled, who then had to take refuge on Kindonga Island on the Kwanza River. It was not a good time. Eventually, the invaders called for a meeting with Ngolambande for treaty negotiations on how to end this impasse. And it is here that the more well-known story of our queen begins. Nzinga was sent by her brother as the official ambassador and negotiator for the 1622 treaty negotiations with the Portuguese. She arrived in Luanda, and not only did she have all the royal regalia that showcased her position and authority, but arrived with an entourage befitting a royal envoy and member of the royal household. She came dressed in colorful finery, bedecked with jewels, accompanied by hundreds of subjects, including, of course, royal courtiers. When she got to the room to discuss the hearty matters of a peace treaty, she found that the colonial governor had a seat, but she was expected to stand or sit on the rug provided. Very obvious power play for him to try and assert his authority. Nzinga, true to her character, intelligent, strong-willed, and well-versed in how politics goes down, was not going to be intimidated, as she knew her position. And by the way, see, she had grown up in the royal courts. She was well aware that she was not inferior to this man. She signaled one of her maids, who then got down on her hands and knees. Nzinga then proceeded to sit on her, eyeballed this governor, and began the meeting as an equal. She then continued to negotiate as a true expert, refusing conditions for effective surrender, such as the demand for the Ndongo to become a tributary kingdom to the Portuguese. She stated that such a condition could only be demanded of a submitted nation, but not of a nation that spontaneously came forward to offer mutual friendship. She was very aware that these colonizers needed them because the Ndongo had frustrated all their efforts to dominate, even when the invaders looked to the Congo kingdom and used them as allies. They had not been able to achieve what they intended. She then used this as part of the leverage to negotiate conditions that were favorable to her people, the Ndongo, which included the invaders having to leave Ambaka, expulsion of Kasanje and his jagas from the Ngola lands, resumption of trade, and support of her brother's return to his rightful place as Ngola, which would meet the most important condition, the recognition of the Ndongo kingdom as an independent monarchy. To seal the deal, as it were, and as a show of good faith, Nzinga accepted to be baptized, and she was given a new name, Dona Ana de Sousa. After this successful negotiation, Nzinga returned to her people. However, it was bittersweet, because though she had triumphed diplomatically, her brother, Ngolambande, was livid that she had gone and been baptized in a ceremony full of pomp, for he had refused to be baptized. Later, he died in 1624 in exile, and rumors claim that he was killed by his sisters. Rumors, of course, spread by the Portuguese to weaken her claim to be the next Ngola. His death then led to the family rivalry that defined decades of Nzinga's life, which in essence served to further enhance her legendary status as the rightful heir to the throne by Ngolambande, a claim that was disputed by her kinfolk, Harry ala Kiluanje. His side of the family was said to have claims to the throne that had been usurped by Kilimokia Kasenga, and he was now reclaiming that right, which he expected their elders to enforce. But regardless of this protest, Nzinga's claim was backed by the Ndongo Kingdom elders, who cast doubt on Harry's claims. They refused to be swayed. Harry Akilanje looked to the Portuguese for support to the throne, pledging tribute to them, and of course, seeing a potential pawn, they did. And so began the war for the throne through arms and negative propaganda about Nzinga. In addition to supporting Harry, the invaders also reneged on the 1622 treaty. They had not honored any of the agreements reached and proceeded to attack Angola. So clearly, it was on. There was no love lost. Nzinga became Ngola while still on the island of Kindonga, and from here she ruled and offered protection to her people. Captured and enslaved people started to flee from their oppressors, seeking refuge under Nzinga. These included the Kimbares, military-trained men who had been handed over by their own to the invaders, and they felt that this had weakened their own militaries. The Kimbares and others thus strengthened Nzinga's own forces and proved to be loyal to her cause. She did at first try diplomatic means to solve this leadership crisis and prevent Harry from ascending to the throne. She dispatched emissaries, but it was all for naught. So earlier we heard about how Nzinga used to attend high-level political meetings with her father, right? Which prepared her for leadership in terms of understanding the intricacies of diplomacy. But she also received military training, and this was pertinent at the time, as her people were at war with the European invaders and had suffered great losses, especially those who had been captured and sold into slavery, and the added stress of having to move the kingdom's capital to keep it out of the hands of the enemy. It's under this climate that a formidable military mind was formed in Nzinga, on top of her natural intelligence. She also took an active part in the military effort of her late father's army, commanding troops. This is notable, as it plays into how Nzinga remained undissuaded by her kin's claims and allies' attempts. This is notable, as it plays into how Nzinga remained undissuaded by any claims or attempts to take her throne, but was able to maintain her authority for decades, even while effectively in exile. She wasn't scared of a fight, nor was she intimidated by the thought of war. She gained followers and support in her war effort from other rulers in the region, who were previously allied to Harry and the Portuguese invaders. She also got support from other interested parties, the Dutch, who had their own drama with the Portuguese, and she played on this to her advantage. She commanded the respect and loyalty from mercenaries, as well as the feared nomadic armies nicknamed the Jaga by the Portuguese, marrying their chief to gain support, upon which she was given one of the highest titles for a woman under their tradition, Tembanza, or the homeowner. She also became a high priestess, yielding both political and spiritual power. Nzinga evaded capture for decades. Even when it looked like she would be on the back foot, she always had a plan up her sleeve. An example is how, in 1626, Kindonga was at the risk of falling, and the Portuguese were about to breach it. But she called for a three-day truce and implied that she would surrender to the captain. She used that opportunity to escape and disappear. Back to her alliance with the nomadic army. With their support, in 1630, she landed in Matamba, took control of this kingdom, and from here continued to fight for her people, accepting all who fled from their invaders, even if they were collaborators. Building a strong base of operations militarily, she had become a force. And she had a force to reckon with. One which had both men and women as skilled soldiers. Meanwhile, economically, she was continually expanding her reach by getting more kingdoms to follow and trade with hers. So, what happened next? By 1655, finally, the beginning of the end of the war was in sight. Ngola Nzinga, after successfully protecting her people and keeping the invaders at bay, came to the table to negotiate once again for peace. She had proven to be a formidable foe and one who was not going to be beaten. She had made and lost powerful allies, yet she always kept on going. It was evident that these people who had come to these shows, which were hers, had no option but to negotiate a real peace. She agreed to a ceasefire with certain conditions, including the return of her sister, Mochambo, who had been captured, and she would go back to the church, and Dongo would remain independent with her as the rightful Ngola. She also agreed to the resumption of the trade of indentured people from the coast. In 1657, the peace treaty was signed. Ngolanzinga Mbande died of natural causes on the 17th of December, 1663, well into her 80s. Her death was marked with thousands of the military honoring her with reenactments of the battles that took place during her lifetime over a five-day period. Now that is full military honors. Her legacy? Ngolanzinga never let up on her campaign to maintain an independent Dongo and provide freedom for those who were under the threat of colonization. She used all the tools available to do so, from political alliances to religion to military alliances and even marriages of convenience to reach her goal. Feared and respected in equal measure by friend and foe for her skills in diplomacy, military brilliance, and loyalty, she instilled pride in her people. On top of that, she inspired a new identity of people who called themselves the Njingas, who were known for their unyielding nature and deep aversion to any European influence. For them, it was independence or bust. Closer to our time, Nzinga became the symbol of freedom and independence, with her name becoming a rallying call for the nationalist movements of Angola. In 2013, the Angolan government gathered and curated information on this, our queen, and published a collection of her story and life and legacy. Ngola Nzinga Mbande, a true legend of Africa.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So much. I mean, to be honest with you, I think I told you this last year that I already had a legend specifically in my head that I wanted you to narrate. I think I did tell you last year.
Yes, you did.
Because I am that OCD. I am that person. It's like, whose voice? Yes, yes, this one will go.
Yeah.
What was your best bit about this story, about her story?
Yeah.
I know that's a hard question.
No. There's one bit that stands out. I come to negotiate with you and you purport to make me, you think in your small mind that we are equals, not even equals.
Yeah.
You think in your small mind that I am subordinate to you.
Wait, let me show you.
I can't stand in the way of me showing you who I am. Wait.
Let me.
That was so, it was such a simple move, but you know, it's such a, she demolished his idea of power in such a small moment. And the fact that she didn't even have to think twice about it, you know, it's like you know, she's flicking a fly off her shoulder. Small things. Be serious.
Small things. Yes. It's true, because when I was reading this story and when I was sort of like putting it together, I was just like, she was phenomenal. You know, those ones, you know, it's a word that we use for many people today, but it's almost like, and the reason why I use the word legend specifically, especially for the African ones, is because that is the true meaning of the word legend. Like what they do and what they have done, what they accomplished, it's legendary. It's not, it's a legend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And then the other thing that I love about this story, right, is that, first of all, we're talking about literally 400 or 500 years ago. And there's this idea of what an African woman is supposed to be in the collective global, you know, mind, right?
She's fresh,
desperate. She carries a hole. She's withered down. And yet, for me, what was most exciting is the fact that this completely rewrote that narrative. Right. And then there's a clue also in the language
that suggests that, you know, women and men were held in the same esteem. And that's the fact that Ngola is unisex.
Yes.
It's not king or queen. Yeah. It's the fact that it doesn't, we don't differentiate in terms of who can potentially hold power in our society. The ruler is enough. It's not based on your gender. So, you know, talk about a reframing of the power of an African woman. Yeah. That was beautiful.
And
this,
and actually the thing is like, when the more and more you read about African history, the more and more you get into culture, the more and more you realize that this idea that the African woman was somehow subordinate and, as you say, bent over, carrying a hoe and just oppressed, carrying the weight of the world, is really quite the real definition of a false narrative.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah. It's been used to such effect, right? In fact, I know that in my own community, traditionally, actually the most powerful person in the home was the first wife, right?
Simple.
Yeah. She ran, ran the household, including telling her husband who he could marry next. I need help on that one. That one looks like a strong woman in addition to our household. Yeah. Go marry that one.
And I'm not planning to have any more children. So bring her. Exactly. We are, of course, speaking about the Kikuyus of Kenya.
Yes.
So, but actually, I tell people, even when it just comes to Kikuyus, and this is a small example, is that whenever I hear people say, "Oh, Kikuyu women X," I'm like, "But you, let me ask you a question. What is your clan name?" It's a woman's name.
Yeah, thank you.
Simple. It's like basics. Just before you come to me, just tell me your clan name is what? Is it Ageshi? Is it Sabura?
With pride. With pride.
Yes. So that should already tell you the in fact, in Kikuyu tradition, and one day I will do the Gikuyu and Mumbi story. But for example, we don't know what the men's names are.
No.
We don't. But anyway, moving on from there back to you. In fact, thank you. Now we've talked about Kenya. See how you segue me so nicely. please tell the Afriwatu more about yourself. I know many amazing things, but can you just share even a snippet more about yourself?
But from the beginning, we decided that you are my herald.
Okay, I'll start.
Do a better job of doing that because, you know... I'm always intrigued to hear what other people think about the work that I do. So
I remember once asking you, what do you call yourself? And you said a storyteller. And I think people need to understand a little bit more about that because I'm just a storyteller in training compared to you. So please.
Oh, please. Come on. One episode later. You need to start owning. It's like those people who are, so how are you doing? We're just surviving. Eh? That time they're running a business. No. You need to claim progress. Yeah.
I'm claiming progress.
You were in training. Now you're on season 3.
Not so much.
Hello. Yes. Yeah.
This is true. Thank you.
So these days I actually have given myself a new moniker because I love words. Ooh. So, yes. Uh-huh. And that is the story Smith.
Oh.
Yes. Because a blacksmith, I panel beat, I, you know, shape, I, you know, enable stories to come alive, right? So not just tell, but also curate and bring into being. Yeah. So,
yes.
In again, coming back to in Kenya, because mekanikawa stories. So about what six or a bit over 6 years ago, I decided to embrace a new path in terms of where I'm going with my career, and serve an itch which I had. And I think that's the beginning of all entrepreneurs. They solve a pain point which they experience. And you you stop looking around for other people to solve the pain point, and you're just like, let me just do what I can, right? And that's really how PokeBob was born. I think that I just got very frustrated at not seeing enough positive Kenyan stories in our everyday media, not knowing enough about our history beyond, you know, when Vasco da Gama arrived, and two or three legends in terms of our origin stories, which we find in our textbooks. And I think for a country with 44 different communities, surely there's got to be more than what we know. And so that's how essentially Pokwa was born. So we're an online platform, can be found on, you know, any socials, either as Pokwa or Pokwa Stories. And Pokwa is a Swahili phrase, a word, which is how we begin. It's the call of the storyteller. I've really tried to look for a complete like translation. I'm like, actually, why am I trying to look for a complete translation? Because there's no equivalent in English. So it is the call of the storyteller. So, you know, I would say paukwa.
Pakawa.
Sahani.
Now you've lost me.
Okay. Have I just mulikad you? And the way in Tanzania,
I know. Yes. You know you've mulikad me because I'm busy here. You know, I'm just busy here going,
So it is the responsorial, right? Which you know, people in East Africa know that if you start poker, you know, a story is coming. And so we've taken the traditional sort of fireplace gathering, and we're like, now our fireplace is social media. And that is where we share every single day a new story about something that holds up the Kenya that we have, but we really want to just focus on. And so we put together stories in different collections. We've done, right now we're running a series on green heroes. So we love Wangari Maathai. We love her. But there's so many other people who are living that legacy and doing fantastic things. From journalists to communicators to, you know, people are also planting trees, saving rivers. A couple of weeks ago, we did a fun one, which was around games.
I saw that.
Kenyan games. You know, so it's everything from bao, which is even more complicated than chess, to kati, onyiro one, onyiro two, you know, which the things which, really make us who we are as a people, to bullfighting, to all sorts of, and also to upcoming gaming, digital games. So there's a couple of, you know, young guys who are now putting, you know, the equivalents of your Fortnite or War of the Worlds on, you know, with KICC as the backdrop. It's so cool what people are doing.
That is so cool.
Yes, you know, yourselves, you know, and your children also see themselves and their reality in these online worlds. So that's what we do. We look for, we interview, we research different aspects of contemporary and historical Kenya, and we put them in a place where you will only find positive but true. So our thing is that we are inspired by that, saying that until the tale of the hunt is told by the lion, the story will only glorify the hunter, right?
Yeah.
So we're not waiting for anybody else, and it's actually nobody else's responsibility to tell the story of Kenya apart from Kenyans. So as a team of Kenyan storytellers, that is what we do, and we love it. And then now we get to help organizations also tell their stories. We do training for people to be able to stand up and share their personal stories in different forums. We work with videographers and photographers to bring, you know, stories to life of what's happening across this continent of people who are advancing social change. Having fun as we do it.
Please. That is so. I do need to reiterate to the AfriWatu, whenever I ask these questions, none of my guests have been prepared. They just have. So
yeah, I came to narrate. Yes,
you know, she came to narrate. So, but my point is that the passion that you have for what it is you do, is very obvious because this is not a scripted response. It's like, this is what I do. I tell stories. Mona has just put me on the spot going, yeah, tell people what you do.
Uh-huh. Seen otherwise.
Otherwise. And actually, because obviously Pauko started before Afriwetu, and that's one of the things which is inspiring in terms of, as you say, we have to tell our own stories. And that's, you know, the tagline for Afriwetu is rooted in our story.
Exactly.
Literally. And I'm going to Malika you here, because when I said earlier that every time we have a conversation with you, I leave feeling smarter. I'm like, oh yeah, now I feel smarter. I can go into the world and quoting that Muihaki told me and make it seem like I'm so intelligent. These things are in my head. Meanwhile. Because I remember distinctly, and I've told people this, especially my friends, that when I was umming and ahhing on the fence, as you looked at me earlier, about Afriwetu, you said, don't let being great get in the way of you being good. And I was like, gosh, Yanni. You know, we should start. So for those who don't know, there's in East Africa, we have this material, cotton material, very special called kangas. And on kangas, you usually have sayings and proverbs and all sorts happen. And sometimes some of the words Muihaki comes out with, or the phrases, I'm just like, hey, I need a kanga to just put that phrase. That's what I need, just a kanga with that phrase, because wow. But it is. So I always give you credit, because honestly, one of the people who got me on this path, and I'm forever grateful and forever thankful. Oh. And this is not the first and the last time you'll be on this show, because
yes, yeah, and I have to say, you know, as a writer who doesn't, you know, who appreciates the issue of copyright, that's actually not my saying. Yes,
or is it not?
No, it's not my saying. Oh my gosh, I can't remember, but it is a mantra of mine, right? It is something that I constantly remind myself that, you know what, because I completely believe in excellence. But that belief can also get in the way of just doing what needs to be done. And the other thing I've learned also as an entrepreneur, not being a business person, but a solution provider, because that's my definition. Yes. Yeah. Is by putting stuff out there, the crowd will teach you what they want, what they need, what they, it's just like when we started Poker, it was just like random stories. Then after a while, it was like, actually, no, putting it in a collection makes sense. I wouldn't have known that unless we, you know, started with one toe in the water, three toes. And I'm sure that Afriwetu has also evolved and grown based on what you hear from your listeners.
You're right, because it has been. I have learned a lot, even in terms of my research and how I curate the stories. And I know the one thing which I always say unapologetically is like, I am so sorry, my African brothers and sisters, for the mispronunciation of words, because they definitely happen. and it's one of those things, because I always remember how I feel when people used to mispronounce my middle name. And I'm like, oh, can't you just try? Just try. And if you can't, then just apologize for it. It's fine. But no, definitely it's been a learning curve. We're in season three, year three. Where it's been a learning curve. But for all of this, I'm grateful.
Imagine that.
No. I think we need to wind up, because you and I can be on this for the next 5 hours. And I am well aware that today you're also off. You have to go off soon. But I want to thank you again so much. Asante sana. To everybody else, until next time, Mubarikiwe.